Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, as I said earlier, I think the world is turning Japanese. I really think so. And don't trust me, Chris Holdsworth, investment strategist at Investec Wealth Investments, has some data that just might prove my point in the week ahead. Evening, Chris.
Evening, Michael, and evening to everybody listening.
And I say we're turning Japanese because the Japanese lost decade, or shall it now be three decades, really has perplexed many. There's been very little inflation in the Japanese economy, and we're starting to see signs of that across the world, from the US to Europe.
Yeah, aside from the tariffs, this is the major theme running through global markets at the moment. I mean, there's a way that you can infer market expectations for long-term inflation. And what's been happening over the past 6 weeks is that those expectations have been in fairly serious decline, to the extent now that the market doesn't believe inflation is going to be getting close to 2% over the next decade. And central banks take that sort of stuff very seriously. They've got inflation targets of around 2%, and when the market starts to say it's not going to happen, they tend to respond.
What does that mean? Because we've seen financial conditions starting to ease all over the world. The Bank of Australia this morning, just the latest central bank to start cutting rates. We see our own Lesetha Kanyago cooing loudly like a dove, and we've got the Fed meeting now. How much more room is there to cut, though, in an environment where we're pretty much close to zero all over the world?
Well, the ECB announced today that a zero low bound doesn't really exist. I mean, if need be, they could just cut further. Or they can simply buy more bonds or delay the point at which they're going to hike. So everyone thought that the ECB would be constrained, and they've announced, in effect, they're not. Mr. Trump is clearly unhappy about that, and he feels it would be cheating for the ECB to cut while the US is not, and he expressed that view on Twitter. But there is scope for even the Europeans, and of course there's scope for the Americans too. The market is now pricing in a greater than 50% probability of three cuts by year end. The Reserve Bank of Australia has indicated while they have cut, there's further to be done there as well. So there seems to be a long way to go in terms of providing easing around the world.
You found that there are worse forecasters of interest rates than our own Saab governor. Neither the sell side nor the buy side are very good at forecasting interest rates.
Yeah, this is an indictment on our industry. The Wall Street Journal conducts a survey every month in the US. They get about 50 economists, eminent and prominent economists.
It's 100 pair of hands.
Yeah, exactly. You know, sometimes more. To provide a forecast of where interest rates are going to go, where the long bond yield is going to go over the next 6 months and 12 months. And if you look at their survey that they conducted in January, not a single analyst was even close to what's actually happened. Yields at the moment in the US are around 2%. The lowest of the 50 contributors was around 2.5%. It was outside the band of 50 economists contributing. One has to question the faith that we provide or place in these long-term forecasts. And I say that as someone who provides these sort of long-term forecasts.
taking a poke at your own forecasting ability and the industry's problem, I think at this time, has certainly been exacerbated by a period of monetary policy response and tools that have been used that we really haven't seen. It's unprecedented in global history, the kind of NERP policies, the bond buying, the quantitative easing. We are in uncharted territory. It makes forecasting and predicting using traditional models very difficult.
Yeah, what's curious is that it's not just market commentators that have been getting it fairly consistently wrong. It's the market itself. I mean, if you look at the Fed futures market, which is what we use to provide an expectation or back out the market's expectation of where the Fed funds rate is going to go, it's been fairly wrong for a decade. And from 2009 through to 2016, the Fed funds curve consistently said that the Fed is going to hike aggressively. Hmm. Eventually, when the Fed eventually did start to hike, the market said it's going to hike far less aggressively than it actually did. And now it's saying that the Fed is going to cut. And we have to question, why believe it now when it's been so reliably wrong for so very long?
And we still continue to see that bond and equity markets are clearly not singing from the same hymn sheet. And this has been going on for some time, though.
Yeah, I mean, this is bizarre. And what is bizarre is how long it's gone on. You've got these yield curves that are inverted around the world telling us that economic growth is in question and it's going to decline. We're going to have a recession in the US. And you've got the equity market with multiples roughly in line with the historical averages, some slightly above, saying everything is fine. But the disconnect's even deeper than that. If you look at volatility, equity market volatility is pretty normal by historical standards. Bond market volatility is extremely high by historical standards. So you've got the bond market saying things are going down the tubes and it's changing its mind about how much is going down every single day, and the equity market's totally ignoring it. This is quite bizarre.
Any idea as to why we're seeing this disconnect? Is it the fact that we have a man with a smartphone in his hand able to move markets at the whim of a tweet, and this uncertainty around trade wars and all of those things factoring into the equation?
I think that does speak to it. Also, central banks have intervened, particularly in the fixed income market, both at the short end and at the long end. And the big question is the extent to which they're going to continue to intervene. So I can understand bond market volatility to some degree. What's curious is that that hasn't affected equity market volatility at all, and that is something we don't actually have an answer for at the moment.
On the economic growth front, there are at least some encouraging signs of a pickup in U.S. activity at the moment.
Yeah, score one for equity markets. If we look at the latest data that's come out of the U.S., the retail sales surprised on the upside, industrial production surprised on the upside. The net result is, if you look at that Atlanta Fed GDP now, and instantaneous estimate of where growth is likely to be in Q2, it's sitting at over 2%, and Q1 was 3%, which says, well, where's the problem? So the bond market is extremely negative given the actual data that we're seeing on the ground.
And it just shows you how quickly things can turn from May's messages to June's messages. It feels like a different era. And some mixed messages out of China. Very difficult to trust Chinese data at the best of times, still mixed.
Yeah, this is also quite curious. Normally, we'd like to be able to formulate a direct view. Economy is doing well, economy is stagnant, or economy is slowing down. But in China, we're getting messages of all three of those. If you look at vehicle sales, which is a reliable indicator typically of consumer health, they've been in decline for 12 months in a row, currently down over 10% year on year, and that would suggest there's a problem. But if you look at steel production, it's currently up 10% year on year, which is particularly curious given that steel is normally used for vehicles. What it does suggest is a lot of that steel is being used for construction, which is up 5% year on year, and presumably some of it's being exported. And this drive through stimulus and this increase in steel production has seen iron ore breach $100 again, which is very fortuitous if you happen to be a country that exports iron ore.
South Africa happens to be, but mining is still, if you look at growth, if you look at our bounce and some of the high-frequency data that has come through, mining is still the laggard.
Now, this is particularly strange because we know that a lot of the issues in Q1 is due to the shortage of electricity. But in April, we had electricity. But nonetheless, the mining numbers in an environment where iron ore prices are very high disappointed. But if you look at the other high-frequency data that came through, there was a huge bounce in April. And though we're still waiting for May and June's data, it does suggest that Q2 growth in South Africa is going to be very positive, and we need to prepare for a bounce.
So, and a fairly big bounce at that. We'll need one to kickstart sentiment again, because sentiment really did turn very negative following that bout of load shedding. On the electricity front, how are we looking there, Chris?
A bit better than before, but still worse than last year. The energy availability factor from Eskom has now been above 70% for 7 weeks in a row. At beginning of the year, it was sitting at around 60, and above 70 is what allows for moderate growth, which should allow us to grow at close to 1% from this point going forward for the rest of the year. But it's still not allowing us to grow at 3%, and hopefully we'll get some data and some information on how that's going to be resolved at the State of the Nation.
State of the Nation address. It really sets out the vision for this new administration. Many commentators saying it's going to be difficult for President Ramaphosa, considering how important the State of the Nation address in February, pre that election, was. How much new impetus can he provide with the State of the Nation address? What are you going to be looking for in terms of granular detail?
Yeah, there's a lot of scope for improving confidence. The business confidence is still remarkably low in SA. We've chatted about that before. I think there is some low-hanging fruit, first of which is the visa uncertainty. We still have some people being turned away at our borders because they didn't have the right documentation or they didn't know what documentation was required. We can sort that out quite easily. Secondly, we have to address the Eskom issue. We need to know, why has production been so slow? What is the resolution? What is the plan to turn that around? And thirdly, what is the plan for finances? Is there going to be a debt for equity swap? How is it going to happen in such a way that we don't be downgraded? And I think those are the three things we'd need to see an answer on.
The three little pigs with the wolf trying to intervene at the moment in this scenario. Chris Holdsworth, investment strategist at Investec Wealth and Investments. What are your suggestions ahead of that State of the Nation address? Let us know on Twitter at Classic1027 or WhatsApp us on 066 470 1872.